Welcome, welcome, dear listeners, to Stories, Fables, Ghostly Tales, where shadows whisper, legends breathe, and every tale is stitched with a thread of mystery. I'm your host, your guide, your tale teller, ready to take you by the hand and lead you straight into the strange, the haunting, and the absolutely unforgettable. Tonight, we crack open the seal on something ancient, a story written not in ink, but in blood, stone, and stardust, a world where biology and war fuse into something like armor, where humanity walks a planet never meant to host it, and where two alien seeds landed on Earth in error, beginning a war of nature versus will. A tale of giants that terraform, of whispers born from living stone, betrayal, mystery, and one man caught in the teeth of destiny. This is Odum Un Ave, Origins, and it begins with a whisper. Enjoy. Odum Un Ave, Origins. Chapter 1, The Fair in Navir. Everything I know about the world, I learned through broken machines, forgotten pages, and the things no one else cared to notice. You can taste the city of Navir before you ever breathe it. It hits your tongue like static, metallic and strange, spiced with heat and humidity, burning faintly in the back of the throat like cinnamon and solder. Some days it smells like progress, and others, like the corpse of something sacred. But it is always alive, a monstrous thing wrapped in wonder. They say Navir was built over 50 cities, each swallowed by time or war, tech ruin or earthquakes that rewrote the bones of the planet. You walk down a street and the ghosts of civilizations blink at you from glass panels and flickering neon. Digital billboards run alongside mossy brickwork older than anyone alive. Where I lived, in the upper mid-tier sector of East Kellen, the air buzzed with distant generators and the gentle hum of glide trams, those lovely, humming serpents that floated 3 feet above their tracks and glittered like mirages in the dawn. Kellen Street itself was a hybrid of function and poetry. Above, spires made of chrome and carbon glass touched the smog filtering domes that sat like cracked snow globes over each district. And below, crumbling cobblestones ran beside magnetic pavement and smart gutters that filtered rainfall for reuse in nearby buildings. You could lean against a rusted pipe older than your grandparents while sipping coffee brewed by a Cortana 6 AI barrister who remembered your order and your birthday. I loved that paradox. I loved that this city never chose between future and past. It wore both like mismatched gloves. My name is Leo Corden, and if you asked me who I was before all this happened, I'd have told you I was just another student with more questions than answers. A 20-year-old obsessed with the ancient, the strange, the forgotten. Someone who thought history wasn't a subject, but a language no one had learned how to speak properly. I came from a quiet family, tucked in the southern archipelago suburbs, where concrete highways bridged over blue bioluminescent oceans. My mother was a synth designer, my father an amateur researcher. Specifically, he chased theories about celestial myth and prehistoric civilizations. The kind of stuff that gets your grunt applications laughed out of most institutions, but I admired that stubborn spark in him, and maybe I inherited it. My sister, Mira, was my anchor. 4 years older, sharper in the way a scalpel is sharp. Where I dreamed, she calculated. She made the impossible practical, always knew when I was about to do something I'd regret. She used to joke that I was born in the wrong timeline. I took it as a compliment. Right now, I live alone. University dorm, 12B, top floor, last room on the left. The glass wall overlooked the Themascan River, a fusion of east and west, where pagodas balanced on Gothic iron and cherry blossoms grew from holes in brickwork. The koi that swam below glowed orange and blue, their bodies laced with bioluminescent patterns, part natural, part lab-grown, and always beautiful. My room was a chaos of stacked books, ancient manuscripts in display casings, old world scrolls, two dehumidifiers, and a converted Wraith model scanner I'd hacked to read ink off carbon fragile paper without breaking it. Half my walls were covered in pinned notes, translations, and photographs of dig sites most people had never heard of. I had exactly three friends: my roommate's cat, my synth kettle, her name was Bertha, and my advisor, Professor Griggs, who once told me he stayed at the university just to read the things I found. I was absolutely flattered. That morning, the sun had risen soft and slow, slicing through mist that curled around the old sky rail supports like cigarette smoke. It was Exhibition Day, a once-a-year tradition where the University of Nevers' five colleges display their finest work to the public, hoping to impress sponsors and companies desperate to snatch up young minds before someone else did. I wasn't there to network, though. I came for the artifacts. It's always, and always has been, the artifacts. Told myself it was for research, that I was doing it for my thesis, that it was a simple walk through the exhibition, maybe a few scans and photos, then back to the dorm with a process curry and a dozen tabs open across my desk. That was the official story. But the truth was, I came because something had been humming beneath my skin all week, like gravity pulling sideways, like a word caught on the tip of my soul, and it was getting louder every day I ignored it. You see, every year, the College of Theoretical Anthropohistorics open their vaults for exactly one day, just long enough to remind the public that Nevers still cared about where it came from, even if the future was louder. They never brought common relics. No, they brought anomalies, unclassified fragments of unknown origin, tools without context, fossils that didn't match the timeline, texts written in languages that didn't belong to Nevers or any known colony, things that breathed old air. And this year, they whispered, they'd be unveiling something they didn't even try to name. They called them the slabs, unknown ceramic formations. Even before I saw them, I knew, not logically, not scientifically, not through any data, that it ran deeper than just that. An intuition that struck like lightning in the bones. A combination of emotion and theoretical knowledge of Nevers' history. There's a moment, so rare, so brief, when your body recognizes something your brain hasn't caught up to. Like remembering a dream you never had. Like deja vu with a heartbeat. That's what I felt as I drifted through the heart of the fair, letting the current of noise and lights carry me closer. The Nevers Exhibition of Innovation and Integration was a sensory overload. Always had been. Part science fair, part cultural carnival, part arms race of intellect and imagination. It's easy to get lost there, and I'm not talking about physically, I'm talking about mentally. Nanotech dresses shimmered in mid-transformation, shifting from fabric to translucent petals, then to something like fog that reassembled on command. Beside them, morphing architecture pods bloomed in slow motion, demonstrating how homes in the void colonies could respond to emotion and mood, adapting shape and color to mental states. There were synthetic bonsai trees that hummed lullabies, plants engineered to mimic the timbre of human voices. Amazing feats of human ingenuity. Children laughed as floating drones carved sculptures from sound waves, their shapes reacting in real time to the pitch and tone of their giggles. AI chefs flipped noodles from 50-year-old recipes recited in the original dialects by avatars shaped like their creators. It was beautiful, magical even, and completely beside the point, because I wasn't there for the future. I was here for what we weren't supposed to remember. Nevir itself was a city suspended between time zones of culture and technology, a living contradiction. Neo-Britannic towers fused with Shinto courtyards and steam vents beside prayer shrines. You could see monks in the chrome-plated robes offering incense in the base of skyscrapers, while androids bowed respectfully and carried offerings uphill to stone temples older than most countries. Above, a soft-filtered sky glowed violet-grey under the shield of the Thammasaka Dome. The city's atmospheric net that flickered in geometric hexes during solar storms, and beneath it all, the streets teemed with a kind of quiet awe. Humans and synths, biolooms and bots, all walking together like some strange urban dream that just worked. I'd grown up in this world, but I'd always had one foot in another. My father, Elias Cauldron, was a historian in name only. His real passion was myth and memory, in science and speculation. He believed our oldest legends were echoes of things too old to measure. He spent his life chasing stories no one wanted to fund, translating patterns in crater fields, deciphering whispers in the soil. He raised me on bedtime tales about the children of the Skyfall, about twin seeds, Ave and Odum, hurled across space before humanity ever spoke. He believed Nevir was an accident, a battlefield of origin, a mistake written into the stars. I thought he was crazy, until I started seeing the patterns too. My sister Mira took after our mother. Practical, grounded, brilliant, she worked in logistics for orbital transport, wielded math like a sword. We never clashed exactly, she understood I saw things differently, but she never believed. Not the way Dad and I did. Well, me to a point. And that was okay. Some things you have to believe alone. So when I saw the slabs at the fair, I didn't feel surprised. Not exactly. It was something quieter, something older, a kind of stillness, a peace that settled behind the eyes and slowed the breath. There, tucked into a quiet corner of the West Pavilion, far from the buzz and spectacle, stood a booth unlike any other. No music, no lights, just stillness and the soft wind. Wood, steel, real materials, worn with use, the kind of display that wasn't meant to attract crowds. I drifted toward it, and there they were. Four slabs, each roughly the size of a chair, but shaped like something that had grown rather than been carved. Their surface flowed with vein-like etchings, as subtle as scars. And the texture? Well, it wasn't just stone. Not quite. It shimmered in the way organic matter sometimes does when it's pretending to be still. Around the edges of each slab curled obsidian black petals, soft-looking, delicate, like soot shaped into feathers. They didn't catch light. They swallowed it. This was unbelievable. It was like looking at a flower that had grown on the edge of death and decided to bloom anyway. The placard beside them read, "Unclassified artifacts, origins unknown. Estimated discovery 128 years ago. Site, Deep Sector 3. Do not touch." No attendants, no researchers, just a whispering quiet. But above the sign, barely visible unless you were standing directly in front, thin blue lattice work shimmered across the space between the slabs, a microfilament security field humming just below the range of human hearing, the kind used in gallery vaults and old world preservation chambers, invisible to most, harmless unless breached, and something I had become all too familiar with as I visited more and more vaults and galleries. A casual pastime of my research. A small black eye blinked softly in the ceiling corner, an auto-sentinel, its lens unblinking, watching. No guards, but that didn't mean the room wasn't protected. It simply meant that the booth expected to be respected. And yet somehow standing there, just outside the field, I couldn't shake the feeling that the slabs weren't being protected from us. They were being protected from something else. Just a guess, but something that creeped into my mind. I stepped closer. The air was different here, still charged with the hum of the fair, but beneath it, something deeper, slower. A presence so subtle, I could have been imagining it, if it hadn't started curling up the back of my spine. My fingertips twitched. Every part of me aches to reach forward, to feel the stone, to ask it what it remembered. And I mean, logically, at the time, it didn't seem crazy to think of asking a slab of whatever this was a question. But now, looking back on it, I'd think myself mad. So even though I wanted to move forward, I decided to halt. But a short moment passed, and before I could think otherwise, something changed. The filament flickered, just once. So subtle I thought I'd imagined it. A hairline glitch across the barrier, like a drop of water breaking the surface of still glass. Then it was gone. I glanced up. The auto-sentinel had stopped blinking, its lens still dark, unresponsive. That shouldn't have happened. These lenses have an incredible backbone connection to the network. Even in idle mode, the unit was programmed to emit a soft pulse to signal connectivity, a heartbeat, a handshake with the grid. But now it was silent? A second ripple moved through the security field. This one I felt. A sudden pressure drop in the air, like a vacuum forming around the slabs. The kind of shift you don't hear, but your body does. My eyes popped softly. A low static crawled across the back of my neck. The hairs on my arms lifted, slow and mechanical, as if the atmosphere itself had hiccuped. Then came the sound, barely audible, a soft crackle, like distant electricity on wet stone. And the field, once stable, symmetrical, shimmered out of sync, its edges warped, the light threading through it, twitching unnaturally, like it was struggling to hold shape. No alarms, no alerts, just quiet malfunction. I looked back toward the crowd. No one else had noticed. They were moving on, laughing, engrossed in drone performances and augmented acrobatics. The world still believed everything was functioning. But here, inside this tiny booth, standing before these apparent slabs, I knew the containment was failing. Not violently, not suddenly either. Quietly and unassumingly. But I did notice something inside the slabs. Something breathing slower, deeper, testing the boundaries of its sleep. The security hadn't collapsed, not yet. But it was no longer a wall either. And that's when it happened. One of the slabs pulsed, just once. A flicker, not of light but of presence. Like something deep inside had shifted its weight, exhaled. Not a hallucination, not my imagination. This was contact. I froze. Every hair on my body stood up like a static charge had crawled inside my body. My lungs stalled. And then, from somewhere beneath my ribs, a warmth bloomed. Not sharp, not painful, just known. Like recognizing your mother's handwriting on an ancient wall. Like hearing your name whispered in a voice you've never heard, but already trust. I didn't move, didn't breathe. A full minute might have passed, but I couldn't even tell. And then I realized I was alone. The crowd had moved on, the fair's rhythm had shifted. I turned my head, dazed, just in time to glimpse a door half hidden behind the display. It was ajar. A thin shaft of shadowed light spilled out beyond it, outlining the top of a descending staircase. Again, no one guarding it, no one watching it. A single minute, that's all I had, maybe less. Every rule, every regulation, every line I'd promised never to cross screamed inside me, but some doors you don't walk away from. I stepped through that doorway. No hesitation, no farewell. The fair faded behind me like mist. And in the narrow stairwell, metal-walled, ancient humming faintly with systems too old to still be alive, I descended into something deeper, older. And the last thing I remember before everything changed was the sound of something deep beneath the ground beginning to stir. Chapter 2: The Whisper Beneath Stone. Curiosity is a kind of hunger. Once it starts, it doesn't stop with a taste. It wants the marrow. Behind the exhibit's curtain, time lost its grip. The laughter, music, and electric noise of the fair dimmed the instant I stepped through the gap in the display tent. Like the world exhaled and left me in its lungs. I found myself in a narrow corridor, lined with old paneling and unlit bulbs, stretching downward in a steady incline. My skin tightened as the air changed, clean at first, then tinged with something aged. Dust, oil, metal, and that strange copper scent of something once living, now preserved in silence. Again, there were no signs, no guards, just stairs. They spiraled down, smooth but worn, metal plates underfoot, dulled from years of use or abandonment. I couldn't tell which. Each step echoed too clearly. The sound bounced off the walls as though I were descending into something hollow and long buried. The corridor narrowed as I went, the ceiling pressing down, the light dimming further until only the soft glow from my data watch cast shaped around me. It felt like walking into a throat, a metallic one at that, one that hadn't swallowed anything in a very, very long time. And yet I kept going. The deeper I went, the louder it became. Not with noise, but with presence, and a pressure at the base of my skull. Like the hallway was saturated with invisible tension. Not malevolent, not yet, but aware. It was the way a forest watches when you've crossed too far off trail. Not hostile, just curious, waiting to decide, with eyes in the back of your neck. Finally, the stairwell widened into a hexagonal antechamber, walls fitted with dull consoles and thick conduits that coiled like arteries across the ceiling. The lights here were broken or flickering, most of them having long since given up the will to shine. The walls bore faded warning labels in ancient dialects, hybrids of old Japanese, Latin, and something less readable. There were also markings I didn't recognize, etched curves and parallel arcs burned deep into the steel, pulsing slightly when I looked at them too long. There were no security guards, no surveillance, and I find myself asking, why? As I travelled further and further, not even a sound was peeping from the walls or this place, just an emptiness so loud pressed into my ears like pressure from deep underwater. At the centre of the chamber, they stood waiting, and by they I meant slabs. Beautiful, adorned slabs with those dark obsidian petals. Soft feathers growing from the slabs themselves. More than I had seen upstairs and outside. Not four, but dozens. Arranged in wide spirals, some upright, others tilted or partially enclosed in shattered storage crates. They didn't sit like relics. They didn't stand like machines. They waited like animals in hibernation, or weapons not yet drawn off the rack. Each slab looked like petrified wood twisted into unnatural geometry, edges asymmetrical, warped in organic curves and fractured ridges. But they pulsed faintly, as if their cores contained something not yet dead. The black petal-like structures curled around their edges in soft, velvet spirals. Petals, but not flowers. More like growths. Like extension of something underneath the stone from within it. The air was warm here, wrongly warm, like a cave too deep to know sunlight, yet filled with a feverish breath of something ancient. I took a step forward. My chest tightened, a flicker of vertigo. My eyes tried to move away and off the patterns of the slabs, but where my eyes would look away, my body pulled closer. There was a rhythm now, subtle, like a heartbeat I hadn't noticed until I matched it with my own. It wasn't fear I felt. Not exactly. It was some kind of recognition. I approached one slab, the nearest, taller than me by a head. Its center shimmered with veins of dark gold, moving almost imperceptibly beneath the surface, just visible. Its petals were curled inward tightly, as though protecting something sacred or potentially alive. And I whispered. I don't know why I whispered, why I didn't yell, why I didn't talk. I just chose to whisper.
What are you?
Not loudly, not intentionally, just a question. A breath of sound that slipped out of me like it belonged to someone else. The slab answered. Not in voice, not in words. In heat. One radiant pulse. Heat blooming out from its center in a slow wave that rolled over my skin like sun-warmed silk. My heartbeat doubled. Sweat beaded on the back of my neck and my hands trembled. The feeling wasn't violent, but it was intimate. The kind of touch that knows your shape, that has been waiting for you specifically. That knows you not by name, but by something deeper. By resonance. By soul. And for a moment, I felt as though I'd been seen entirely. Through my skin and through my blood. By the thoughts, the fears, and the spark of who I was. I took a step back. The rest of the slabs remained still. Completely silent, dreaming. But this one had opened its eye. Figuratively. I laughed nervously, too loudly in the silence. Yeah. Sure. I'm crazy. I whispered, swallowing. Of course it's me, of course. The weirdest rock in the room wants me. Of course. But something inside me wasn't laughing, because in the space between heartbeats I felt it. A sound. Low, distant, like thunder, miles away, rolled through a concrete sky, then again, louder. The entire room vibrated. Crates trembled. Dust fell in sheets from overhead pipes. The slabs hummed. Not sound, but frequency. A shared static that rattled my molars and shook something loose behind my eyes. And then came a sound from above. The world was screaming. Sirens ignited the walls, muffled through layers of steel. A monitor on the far side of the room flared to life. Its screens, crack and bleeding light, red text crawled it with a scent of ancient urgency.
Odom detected. Zone breach. Imminent contact. Secure all hostile organic tech.
My mouth went dry. The word punched straight through me. Odom. Myth made manifest. Terraformers. Destroyers. Creatures of reshaping and consumption, seeds from another place. Never meant to land here. Never meant to wake. And yet here they were. The tremors grew sharper, louder, closer. The sound of massive limbs shifting across pavement and still. Hell, it might have been within the pavement above. Something was climbing into the world. I turned to run, but the slab was already awake. It opened. Not with hinges. Not like a box. But like a wound. A slow unfurling of dark obsidian petals peeling back from its surface with a sound like cracking ice. The stone reshaped into tendrils. Liquid. Sinuous. Snaking outward and coiling around my ankles. I stumbled. Cried out, tried to back away, but the floor no longer existed beneath me. The world swallowed me whole. Darkness, but not absence, not void. This place had weight, warmth, a slow undulating pressure that cradled me from all sides. I couldn't see it, but I could feel a cocoon of stone. No, flesh disguised as stone. Tightened around me like a memory closing in. I couldn't move, I couldn't scream, but I could speak, so I whispered,
"What are you?"
The air responded. No voice, no language, just feeling. heat rushing into my bloodstream, pain cresting like a fever spike. My heart skipped. I whispered again, "Why me?" Another shift. Goose flesh, sudden and sharp. My chest tightened. A trickle of warmth rolled down the back of my spine. Not blood. Sweat. Panic. Or rather, communication. Then I tried something else. "Let me go." And the suit tightened. Around my ribs, my throat, my jaw. It may have felt like wrapping itself around me, but it was doing much more. I felt it. It was becoming me, shaping itself to my bones, my muscles, my will. Every word became a bond, every breath a contract. A warm spike lingers in the back of my neck. A thought added to my mind. It was an Ave. And the Ave was learning me, reconfiguring itself based on the resonance of my voice, vocalized resonance, a contract spoken in word, that ancient phrase from a book I read just a couple of years ago. It was never a metaphor. It was in fact a code, and it was the key. I was suffocating, pressure everywhere, and yet deep inside the panic I knew something was waking within. So I whispered a final word. "Fight." And the world cracked open. Smoke clawed at the edges of my vision, rolling in thick tendrils through the twisted ribs of the lab's collapsed ceiling. The air tasted like charred metal and scorched ozone. Acrid, bitter, somewhere overhead, the dying heartbeat of an emergency klaxon blared and faltered, then silence. At first, I didn't move, couldn't move, not from fear, but because my body didn't feel like mine anymore. I was buried, or half buried, beneath a wreck of ceiling tiles, shattered lights, and what looked like melted scaffolding. But I didn't feel weight, not on my chest, not on my limbs, because the pressure didn't come from external. It came from within. Just a strange pressure, not against me, but inside me. Like my bones had become hollow and filled with molten sap. And then came a sensation, a tingle in the tips of my fingers, not like pins and needles, but the electric silk sliding beneath my skin, as if silken cloth lay just beneath it. A hum rolled through my chest, low and rhythmic, not my heartbeat, well, not mine alone. Something was breathing with me. I opened my eyes, at least I think I did, because the world I saw was not the one I'd known. Everything was brighter, sharper, the edges of reality no longer softened with distance. I could see the spiderweb cracks in steel 20 meters away. I could feel heat signatures bleeding through the rubble, like soft smoke ebbing from within those gaps, still cooling metal scorched data panels, and somewhere beneath a chemical trail of decay I couldn't name but instinctively understood. My hands moved before I told them to. Black. Obsidian. Seamless. The armor didn't sit on me, it was in me. Of me. As if the obsidian plates were bonded to my bones. No seams, no joints, just matte black plating, almost soft in its curvature. As if armor carved by wind instead of hammers. And along my arms, etched lines of gold shimmered faintly in the dust, pulsing with each breath I took. I flexed my fingers. The suit responded with flawless precision, zero resistance. Like it had memorized my movements, what I was capable of, my nervous system, an open book to whatever had read me, and rewrote the rules of my motion. And then I felt it, not physically, not emotionally, but chemically. The Ave, my suit, responded to me with sensations, not words. A rush of warmth in my chest, readiness. A tingle down my spine, caution. A tightening across my shoulders. Danger. close. And above all, a growing heat in the back of my neck. Not pain, no, not fear, but need. Stand, it seemed to say. Not in words, but in an impulse that seized my muscles before I could argue. I rose. Slabs of debris slid off my shoulders like dry leaves. My movement sent cracks racing through the floor. Every joint, ankle, knee, elbow, spine moved like a song remembered in muscle. And the petals, gods, the petals, they had bloomed from my back in sweeping arcs, curling with almost ceremonial grace, not decorative nor ornamental. They moved when I moved. Subtle, precise, adjusting with every breath, reacting to shifts in air pressure, light, and temperature, like a sensor array, like hardened appendages built for reading the environment and responding in real time. They weren't wings. They were instruments designed for survival, for combat, and for tracking. They were sensors, weapons, and memory. The Ave had wrapped me in its skin, but it had also opened itself to me. We were bonded now, by voice, resonance, and by need. And as the Ave adjusted to my form, I felt something crawl beneath my sternum, a slow burning rising up my throat like magma wrapped in glass. My heart beat twice for every one breath. The second pulse wasn't mine, but I could tell where it ended and I began. I clenched my jaw as a new awareness sank into my bones. I could feel things outside the room. Footsteps. No, not steps. Shifts. Pressure in the air. Bending. Tearing. The sound of buildings being reshaped by something vast and sentient. Something pushing its will into the world through pure mass. And beneath it all, beneath the breath, the rubble, the heat, there was a whisper that didn't belong to a mouth. A call. Something beyond the ruined walls of the lab, something terrible and close. I stepped forward and the world obeyed. The debris beneath me cracked and I realized I didn't feel the ground. I could feel the tension of it, but not the physicality. Like I could predict where it would crack next. How much force I'd need to leap 10 meters, how to land. The math burned itself into my mind automatically. I felt what I could and could not do. And my goodness, it felt like there was nothing I couldn't do. My mind sharpened, heightened, expanded, problem solving. It was adapting. My gift, my curse, my relentless brain, always turning gears, was now wrapped in war skin and connected to a network of instincts I couldn't begin to catalogue. The Ave wasn't just armor, it was a partner. And it had made me something else. Not a soldier, not yet. But certainly, a defender. A key, a response. The voice came again, this time from the city above, a low, mournful groan that vibrated through the concrete skeleton of the lab. Not a scream, not a roar, a step. Something colossal moved through Nevere, something with limbs that reconstructed space with each motion. My breath hitched. The Ave responded. My pulse doubled. The dark obsidian petals drew in slowly, tight, coiled. I felt heat in my hands, my chest and my teeth. I was supposed to be afraid, but I wasn't. I was burning, not with rage, but with clarity. I wasn't who I was 10 minutes ago. I wasn't a student, a scholar, or a boy curious about stones. I was a response to an ancient mistake, a voice amplified by an armor older than civilization, made for a war that had been paused, but never ended. And I could hear it now. In the bone hum of the Ave, a single word not spoken but felt. Run or rise. I stood taller. Outside, the Odum took another step, and the city wept. I whispered back, steady as stone. Inspired, empowered. And that whisper was, we. fight. And so, dear listeners, the first chapter closes. Tonight we walk the corridors of Nevere, that dreaming city of chrome and stone. We followed Leo Colden, curious, bright, unaware of the ancient pulse beneath his feet, as he stepped off the mapped path and into something older than memory. We witnessed the stirrings of the slabs, the fragile flicker of dormant technology, or perhaps biology, beginning to wake. We felt the first tremors of the Odum, stirring from their long, slow descent through time, ready to reclaim what was never meant to be shared. And in Leo's breath, in his whisper, something answered. But none of this could come to life without the incredible patrons who keep this tale and this podcast breathing. Those who light the lanterns as I and we walk deeper into the dark. First and foremost, to Matt O'Star, my ode Night Tea Titan, the one who walks between creation and detail, a true architect of the unseen. Your kindness isn't quiet. It radiates, like the inner framework of the Ave suit itself, thoughtful, intentional, essential. Your intellect and passion shape the invisible skeletons that hold everything upright. Like the hidden design beneath Nevere's surface, the forgotten support beams that keep the city standing against storms, tremors, and time. You remind me that wonder isn't only found in what we build, but how we build it. The slabs pulse to patterns most people miss. A pattern you would never miss, Matto. You see them, you understand their rhythm. And like the Ave waiting to bond, your attention to the smallest groove, the quietest hum, brings the story to life. Thank you, Matto, for your light, your structure, and your unwavering belief in every mysterious shape that doesn't fit the blueprint, but shines a light from this podcast. Thank you, Matto, for being my friend and supporting me in the way you do. You're an absolute superstar. Have a kick-ass week ahead, mate. And now for my white tea warlords. I am lucky to have Lezza Bauer, whose strength is more than muscle, is the unbreakable will that anchors every story. Your heart beats like a war drum beneath quiet compassion, and I imagine you standing beside Leo when the Ave locks to his bones, undaunted, unflinching, and ready. In a world reshaping itself without warning, you are the one who plants your feet and holds the line. Thank you for your fierce loyalty, your determination, and the kindness you carry even into battle. Lezza, you are amazing. I hope your gym session absolutely sees you punching above your weight and that you have a fantastic week ahead. Thanks for being my friend, and thanks for supporting the podcast. You're brilliant. To my next white tea warlord, Joseph Schroeder, the zombie-slaying tactician, the weapon specialist, the survivalist supreme. If Nevere falls and the Odum walk its ruin, it will be your voice we listen to over the comms. You would have already mapped the exits, catalogued the ammo, fortified the perimeter, and when the unknown bleeds through the cracks, you're the one who keeps us breathing. Thank you, Joseph, for always thinking three moves ahead and packing enough firepower to turn the tide. Have a wonderful, wonderful week ahead. Thank you so much, Joseph, for your support. And to my next white tea warlord, Marvelous Maya. Regal sovereign of claws and cleverness, commander of the cat army, agile, silent, precise, your presence would ripple through the Ave suit like instinct encoded into reflex. A silent protector, a shadow on a rooftop. You'd never be seen until it was far, far too late. The Odum won't know what hit them. Thank you for bringing your stealth, your wit, and the quiet power that prowls in every dark corner of this tale. Thank you, Maya, for your amazing support and for being a pal of mine. Have an epic week ahead. And my next white tea warlord, Sangeetha, the spirit walker, the seer. When the story turns strange, when the air thickens with unseen meaning, you're the one who already knows which way the wind will shift. The Ave would listen to you as it listens to the stars. Your calm, your insight, your care. In every vision, every still breath before the storm, your voice carries. Thank you for your clarity, for your depth, and for reading the hidden paths beneath the tale. Sangeetha, thank you so much for your support and your friendship. Have a kick butt week ahead. And thank you so much for the idea sent through to me via your email. I am writing your story as we speak. Definitely when I'm back from Singapore, I'm going to boot that story right on up. You always have fantastic ideas. This goes out to all my supporters, White Tea, Warlord, and Earl Greys, all of the above and all around. If you have stories you want to send my way as ideas, or you've got stories that you want read, send them through to me via my email, which is storiesfablesghostlytales@gmail.com. If you want to support more of what I do, knowing full well it goes right back into production, visit my Patreon page, which is www.patreon.com/SFGT. So that's patreon.com/SFGT. All supporters get episodes 1 week early and a higher quality audio bitrate. I hope you love it. And just a quick little update for you wonderful listeners before I head off. This Friday, I'll be heading off to Singapore. That's right, jetting off for a little trip and won't be back until the 20th. But don't worry, I haven't left you high and ghostly. To make sure you still get your regular fix of strange stories and chilling tales, I've queued up a collection of old-time radio remastered episodes while I'm away. These ones are pure atmosphere, no intro, no outro, just the clean, classic audio. Why no outros or intros? Well, time's been tight, and I wanted to make sure I can get them all edited and prepped in time before I vanish into airport limbo. So it's just the story, raw and uninterrupted, how they used to do it in the golden age of radio horror. I'll miss you all while I'm gone, but I'll be back with brand new tales, twisted plots, and more of that deliciously eerie storytelling very soon. But before I do sign off, I want to say my big thank yous to my Earl Grey enforcers, my Sentia supporters, and my Chamomile supporter range as well. The legends are as follows. Jessica Garcia, Michael Krupp, Seductive Smiles, Jane Gumnick, Paige Kramer, Divided by Zero, Juicebox Andy, Just Heather, Peter Raffaele, and Chad Warren. Thank you all so much for your support. Absolute legends. And to all of you that listened this far, thank you for believing in the strange, for holding the line between light and shadow, and making this space possible. Until next time, sleep deep, dream dark, and remember, when stones whisper, it's never truly asleep. Until next, we meet.
Listening legends, thank you to my Patreon supporters, and a huge shout out to Matto Star, Lesosaurus, Joseph, Maya, and Sangeetha. Have a great week.